Well, I do declare. Here comes the colonel.
Yes. Just like a bad penny, your old colonel has returned. Welcome back to the second half of The Promise of Tomorrow here on the Science News Radio Network, exploring the business of emerging science. And in the first half hour, nanotechnology and the human genome, with the Assistant Professor of Pharmaceutical Sciences at the University of North Texas System College of Pharmacy and the North Texas Health Science Center, Dr. Jin Liu. We're going to get a final word from Dr. Liu in just a minute. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. We have an old friend back with us again, too, in this half hour, Dr. Dashuan Feng, lecturer, author, professor at Macau University in China. Always a fascinating figure. Right now, let's rummage around the coin jar a little bit, step over to our fountain of useless information we have on the set for today's query.
Welcome to the Fountain of Useless Information.
I see we have awakened the spirit of the fountain. Risen from his fountain in all of his watery beauty. Okay, old spirit of the fountain, we threw in the coins because you know all, hear all, see all, and tell all for a price. All right, old spirit of the fountain, here is today's query. What industry enjoys the highest profit margin among Fortune 500 companies? The industry that enjoys the highest profit margin among Fortune 500 companies, what is it, O Spirit of the Fountain?
I have given you my answer, and now you may tell the other.
Aha! The Spirit of the Fountain knows. And I bet you guessed it too, don't you? What industry enjoys the highest profit margin among Fortune 500 companies? When we just heard a little while ago that to bring a new drug to market, the average cost is $2.6 billion and takes at least 10 years on average. But yes, it's the pharmaceutical company enjoys the highest profit margin among Fortune 500 companies. Pretty amazing. All right, on with our program. So if you were listening in the first half hour, you heard Dr. Jin Liu, Assistant Professor of Pharmaceutical Sciences at the University of North Texas College of Pharmacy and the University of North Texas Health Science Center. She's an expert in working in mapping the human genome and saying that, you know, we'll be able to cure most diseases pretty soon, or at least she thinks so. So we want to get a few parting words from her.
I think in the 20, maybe 10 to 20 years, we probably could conquer many diseases.
Oh, that is so exciting, Dr. Liu. And yes, I've been told by different guests that we've had on the program that the major problem was mapping the human genome. And now that it has been mapped, the next big challenge is being able to manipulate it and being able to do the things with it and not be the mad scientist who creates the monster, but actually do good for humankind. And it sounds like you're on the road for the doing of that. I know you've been mentored in China the early days of your life in Beijing, and now you're in a position to mentor other people. Do you have a words to live by? Maybe some Confucian wisdom, something that you can leave us with that you think are important creeds for us as we live our lives?
I always tell my students, open your mind and follow your heart. So I think the world is changing very fast, and everything is possible. Nothing is impossible. So we need to think boldly and follow our heart to reach our dreams and make this world better. So if I want to give a word to the young people, I always say, open your mind and follow your heart.
Do you have a feeling about the religions and the superstitions of the world holding us back? Because religions, I'm not thinking of anyone in particular, but I see a vast array of them that they call themselves fundamentalists and want to go back to old beliefs and old things. Do you have any kind of a message there?
As I said, open your mind. So I really don't think anything could hold us back as long as we can follow our heart and to find the truth. So I think all the old religions, if we study it and we can find out, you know, if there's anything not right or anything, any wisdom we can take from it and we can learn from it, and everything could be useful for us.
Okay. Dr. Jin Liu, going to be speaking on computational microscopes and the curing of disease through human genome editing. She's the assistant professor for pharmaceutical sciences at the University of North Texas System College of Pharmacy and the University of North Texas Health Science Center. Going to be speaking at the Metricon Conference, October 26. More on that conference at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a link. Dr. Liu, I'm so grateful that you were with us today. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us.
Thank you for having me here.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast, at promiseoftomorrow.biz. If you've been listening for the past couple of weeks, you've noticed we've taken some clips from a breakfast that we had with Dr. Daxuan Feng with Macau University in China. And it was a great conversation, lasted a long time. We've been taking clips of that to give us some insights about China. And here's a little bit more from Dr. Daxuan Feng.
You cannot use 300 years to think of China. You have to use 5,000 years to think of China, which is very tough for Americans to do. Because beyond 300 years, there's nothing here. Okay? I start looking at the map. I look at North America, I say, that's really fascinating. Somehow North America looks like enormous land and gradually almost broken off just before South America. You know, this is very, very narrow, just before it blossoms out into South America. So it is natural to call this a continent. Then you look at South America, it's a continent. You look at Africa, it's a continent. Australia, New Zealand, of course. But Asia Pacific, Asia and Europe is one piece of land.
Yes.
So why do we call them two continents?
Well, it has to be the economic influence of East and West, don't you think? I mean, the Western civilization begins in Greece.
Yes. Actually, I then look at the population distribution. If you look at the five, as I mentioned, the five Stan nations, you know, Kazakhstans and Tajikistans and Uzbekistan, all five nations together, which essentially constitute Central Asia, has less than 70 million people. A province in China called Guangdong Province has 107 million. England has 63 million. Germany has 83 million. So I suspect that it's the population, you know, India is a billion. So essentially, we have population, nothing in between. And so and traveling is so harsh. So Europeans generally don't go to Asia, except on the Silk Road, okay? So I said that's interesting. You know, if we can make connections between the West and the East together with new transportation mode, then the East and the West thinking that we are two continents will slowly merge into one as a supercontinent.
But the culture is so different. You once told me that it was culture that unites us and politics that divides us.
You still feel that way? Absolutely. But when people start to merge back and forth together more and more, I'm not saying it's going to happen tomorrow. I'm saying with modern transportation, with modern modes of communication, within 50, 100 years, that's going to happen. And when that happened, and then we look at, now what happened during the Renaissance? Well, the Renaissance is very interesting. You know, when you think of Renaissance, you always say, oh, great people, Copernicus, great people, Galileo, great people, you know, all these. But you think about it, it's not the great people that is important, although it is very important. It's the fact that these great people all went to universities. And sit next to them were classmates who also learned the same knowledge as they did. Now, their classmates may not have created as great a work as these maestros, but they too, in their own diminutive way, contributed to the greatness of Renaissance. So therefore, the greatness of the Renaissance is the creation, the ubiquitous creation of universities. And within this large piece of area that you call Europe, these ideas fermented and lifted human out of ignorance.
Out of the Dark Ages. That's how we get out of the Dark Ages, because of the universities.
Absolutely. And it isn't just one or two persons. It's thousands and thousands of young people, men and women, that went through higher education. Now, we have new challenges now. We have challenges of global warming. We have new challenges of shortage of energy. All these. You know, Thomas Friedman said something quite remarkable recently. Oh, I don't know how recent, maybe a few years ago. He said, you know, you look at all universities today. Any university that's worth its salt, they all do global warming research. They all do water shortage research. He said, you know what? Global is still warming. Shortage is still shortage. It hasn't reversed itself one iota. So what is the problem? The problem is that just like the Renaissance, where you needed a new way of thinking to live, you know, if you depend on old way of thinking, we will still be thinking that the earth is the center and not the sun. You need someone to jump outside the thinking like Copernicus did. You need the thinking of Isaac Newton. You need the thinking of Francis Bacon to really jump Bacon, to jump out of this. You need the Renaissance to jump out of it. So what we need in the 21st century and beyond is new Renaissance. And we need a new Renaissance. We need people like the new Copernicus, the new Galileo, to take us out of the current mode of thinking and find new ways to solve our new Dark Ages.
So where are these people going to come from, these new thinkers?
These new thinkers will come from these universities when they're out in this one giant supercontinent with creating a new culture which will not just say a little bit of East and West or a little bit West and East, which is what it is, but really fuse them together and think of a new way. And universities, that's what I mean by the university, new challenges and opportunities.
And this is going to happen no matter the mood of isolationism around the world. We see it in Germany. We see it all over the place. And right here in the United States, this is going to happen anyway.
I think it will have to happen anyway. In fact, I suspect that all the things that you talked about are economic isolation, but not cultural isolation. People are beginning, young people are now under, you know, I tell you a very interesting thing recently. I knew a pair of fantastically smart twins, both Indians. Now, you know that India and China for the last 40 years or 50 years have not been that friendly of each other.
No, in competition, quite frankly, haven't they?
Well, more than that. But anyway, the point is things are beginning new political leaders are showing up in China that's talking about India and China must work together. Modi is also talking about that. You know, these two young, one is a faculty member at Indian Institute of Technology, Guwahati. One finishes PhD at Nanyang Technological University of Singapore. They both said that, I look at China, I see new opportunities. okay? I don't care what my government tells me. I find my career, I can find new career opportunities in China. Both actually landed in Chinese universities as faculty members.
Wow, fascinating. Okay.
And these are happening now. In fact, I just wrote an article about them. I said that this may be the watershed of a new era. And I think that with new transportation mode, and that's why I say, I was very fascinated by this piece of history. In 1961, I think, Kennedy one day at the U.S. Congress said, we're going to go to the moon in 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
You must remember that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Now, you must also remember that at that time, people say, you're nuts. We don't have the money, and we probably don't have the technology. But what did he do? He motivated the nation. He used his bully pulpit, is that what it's called?
Yeah, the bully pulpit.
The bully pulpit, as the president, who motivated the university by 1969. Shepard, was it? On the moon? Was it Shepard?
Armstrong.
Armstrong. Armstrong was on the moon.
Neil Armstrong, the first of them.
And he just died recently.
Yes.
Yeah. Neil Armstrong was on the moon. Okay? So I said, India today, I actually discussed this with many Indian friends and some Indian leadership, and they told me that, look, we realize China is growing. You know, China built 20,000 kilometers of high-speed rail in the last 16 years.
Yeah, you were talking about that last time we were talking.
And China's economy is growing, you know, rapidly. You know, people say, oh, it's down to 6% now. And I told them, well, don't forget, the base is a lot larger. But anyway, so Indians said, we know that China is rising. And at some point, we have to face that competition. And to face that competition, we have to understand Chinese thinking. We have to understand Chinese ways and means. And how do we do that? We learn its culture and we learn its language. And then I think there was a minister who said, you know, we have a problem. Of the 1.2 billion people in India, less than 1,000 understand English and Chinese. That's called zero.
Yeah.
And in China, it's the same thing. Of the 3,500 universities, less than a handful have South Asia institutes of research, like zero. So I said that what China needs, the most challenge and opportunity, is that let's use the metaphor of the moon of Kennedy. The 21st century moon for China is what? India. And the 21st century, India's moon is China. You need that kind of bully pulpit transformation. That's what I meant by challenge and opportunity.
All right, with all this facing us then, you do not see in the short run a trade war between the United States and China or Mexico or any of the other things, because we can't have a trade war and accomplish the things that you're envisioning.
I'm not going to predict the future. Who said that? I think future is very hard to predict because it is the future.
I think you're talking about Bayesian, back the father Bayesian, who said that you can try to predict the future, but you're going to change it constantly until it finally arrives, because you're going to learn all new things.
I still hope, and I could be naive, I still hope Trump is a businessman. He will know when it is not a good business, he wouldn't do it.
All right, tell me about your book. I want to hear about your book.
Okay. My book actually is very interesting. In 1995, gosh, 22 years ago, we were all young then, weren't we? I attended a talk in Philadelphia by, then I realized later he was my congressman. That's how naive I was. I didn't even know he was my congressman. Okay. He gave a talk in Philadelphia about the Rust Belt challenges, which Pennsylvania was. And one of the things that the Rust Belt had a problem was that the number of congressional representatives are dropping. I didn't realize that the number of congressmen in the U.S. Congress is fixed number. A gain somewhere else is one loss from somewhere else.
Well, now that would be has to do with apportionment and population.
So Arizona gains one, and somewhere in the Rust Belt will lose one.
But both all the states, no matter what size, get two senators.
Yes, that's true. But the congressman you lose. So he was saying that I think Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, and Maryland combined together will lose 3 to 4 congressmen, whereas the Rust Belt will have 3 or 4 more. And when you lose that, you lose a lot of influence in the Congress. So he was saying, in 1995 was almost the beginning of the internet. I mean, it was at its fledgling state. He said, I heard of this thing called the internet. Maybe we can use internet to put the 4 states as a power together. His name was Congressman Kurt Weldon. He was then the Republican of the chairman of the Armed Services Committee. So I was very fascinated by that because I knew something about internet. I was doing research in astrophysics at that time, and I needed the internet to link to the supercomputer centers in Pittsburgh. So I learned things about that. So I wrote a little article about his speech. I was so touched by it. And then I put it on the internet, and somehow the speech was picked up by the Philadelphia Inquirer, and they published it. It's the first time I published anything in the newspaper. And then I didn't realize that as a congressman, he has staff members that comb the newspaper and see what people talk about their bosses. And somehow I got a call from him, and then, to make a long story short, eventually with him and I worked, I joined a company called SAIC for 4 years, Science Applications International Corporation, before returning back to the university. So that's how I started my writing career.
Breakfast at a busy restaurant with a very fascinating Dr. Daxuan Feng from Macau University. And we'll have more from that busy breakfast is in the weeks ahead. So I hope you'll tune back in. Right now, we're out of time. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast at promiseoftomorrow.biz.
And now, we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
In the next 5 or 10 years, AI will start to appear everywhere. In small increments and in small improvements. But we start accepting it as part of everyday life, on all the devices and in our everyday life. And that's going to change our society and our life the same way as internet has changed it and social networks has changed it in the last 5 or 10 years. So that will be a change, and it will be exciting. My name is Risto Mikkulainen. I'm a professor of computer science at the University of Texas at Austin, and currently on leave working at Sentient Technologies in San Francisco in an AI startup.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
We live tomorrow, 'cause you know what will be there. I am waiting for you. you. I am waiting for you.